Coming up on 27 minutes after the hour on this Transcendent Tuesday morning, Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas, where he has a vineyard and a thriving business. And he's a biochemist by trade. He's also a member of the board at creationmoments.com. And we appreciate Dr. Don so much. He brings us the scientific view of the biblical story of creation. So often through the years, we've talked about that. Lately, we've been kind of diverted into talking about COVID because that's right in his bailiwick. And I don't even know what a bailiwick is, but Dr. Don has one. And he's worked in pharmaceutical for years and in biochemistry, and he knows whereof he speaks. Oh, David Allen Punt, I don't mean to make you an afterthought here, David, but you're here too, aren't you?
I'm here too. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you have questions looming, probably. We've got a lot of ground to cover today.
A bailiwick is an area of jurisdiction.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, that helps clarify things.
The Googlemeister is fast at work this morning.
Now, it usually applies to a bailiff.
Oh, okay.
But it can apply to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Even Dr. Don, then, would have a bailiwick.
Don has a bailiwick as well.
You could say this is in Don's wheelhouse, too. He's a sporting term.
But I hate that phrase.
In that case, let's take that back.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. CDC, the CDC this morning has come out with new numbers for us. They now say the Omicron coronavirus variant is behind 73% of new cases. Just last week, it was like 12%. That's pretty astounding in terms of acceleration. It's all over the place. All of a sudden, the first death from the Omicron variant has been reported. A Texas man, he was in his 50s and had underlying conditions. He was also not vaccinated. He's the first known case of a death from the Omicron variant. Dr. Don, can we trust those numbers?
Can we trust the numbers? Well, the problem, of course, is that the CDC doesn't really have a reliable tracking system. And especially, excuse me, it's not reliable on the adverse event tracking side, of which, you know, there has been many. But the VARS tracking system, for example, the virus adverse event reporting system is woefully lacking, has been for many years, and you would have thought that the CDC would have revamped it. Even the doctors and the nurses who were trying, or anybody really who was trying to report into the system, has a very difficult time because it's an arduous system. It requires a lot of time. You got to answer a lot of questions, and it's just not, you know, not a simple report. And then somebody at the CDC has to review and either include it or not into the adverse event reporting system eventually. So, you know, there needs to be definitely a revamp of that, and probably, you know, the CDC would have been better served had they spent the millions and millions of dollars that they did on the gain of function research over in the Wuhan lab. They would have been it would have been better if they had spent the money on a better tracking system.
Sounds like a stinging rebuke to me, Don.
Oh, well.
There seems to be some invective here.
Yeah, put the blame where the blame
resides.
Mm. And then, you know, that's part of the problem. And, you know, the CDC, the NIH, and the federal governments are looking to Europe because they have a much better system than we have. So to know exactly where these where these cases are, where they're coming from, what the adverse events of the vaccines are, you know, we got to look to other countries to get that data.
There are not 50 countries in Europe, though. There are 50 states here. Do you know of any federal requirement for states or do states design their own reporting system?
Well, I think they report into the CDC reporting system, at least as far as the adverse events are concerned. Now, as far as the number of you know, COVID cases, I think each individual hospital probably reports into, and I don't know this for a fact, but I would surmise that they would port into a state system, and then the state system would report to the national system.
Well, one of the numbers that comes into great question is the actual number of deaths from or by COVID. And there, as I understand, there is no consistency from state to state to state, and it boils down in some cases to dollars. How much money does I don't know why the hospital gets paid more for one kind of a death than another, but that seems to be the case. I've heard, and tell me if I'm wrong, please, that if they report it as a COVID death, they get federal funds, presumably, in a higher amount than death from some other cause. I don't understand that.
Yes, and if they have a COVID patient, they get paid more for a COVID patient than just your regular, ordinary patient with coming in with, let's say, some heart problems or something.
Paid by whom?
By the federal government. The federal government is reimbursing these hospitals for COVID patients. Hmm. And as you said, they also give you a bonus if a patient dies, which is horrible.
Wait a minute. The federal government didn't have any money. They must be using my money for this.
Oh, they're using funny money.
Oh.
Yes, they're using your grandson's, your granddaughter's, and great-granddaughter's, you know, money. That's they're just printing money like it's going out of style in Washington these days. Which of course is another problem, because obviously that too much money chasing too little goods produces inflation. And then
that's like economics 101. Those people should know that.
Exactly. Yeah. And for the Biden administration to deny that is just unbelievable, rhetoric on their part. We will see, I believe we're going to see a rise in interest rates, a tremendous rise in interest rates next year. The Federal Reserve has already mentioned that, we'll probably rise rates three times next year. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have high inflation and high interest. And we haven't seen, things like that since the Carter administration, and was the main reason why Carter lost. Mm-hmm. When he was president. He had runaway inflation and runaway interest rates, and it was stifling the economy. But anyway, that's a side note. It has nothing to do with COVID.
I've got a comment for you from a professor of molecular medicine at Scripps Research. His name is Eric Topol, and he's commenting on the COVID tracking project. He's an advisory board member there, and he says, we're not tracking all the things we need to get a handle on what's going on. It is embarrassing, speaking for the CDC. Now, I haven't heard Walensky. What is that? Do I have the right name, David? Is it her name? Is Walensky head of the CDC?
Yeah, Rachel.
Rachel
yeah.
Walensky, yeah. I haven't heard that comment from her. She would be loath to admit that. But what it means is that the government's making decisions on bad data.
Yes, and they're imposing it on everyone, so you got bad data coming in, inadequate tracking of patients that have COVID, how many, what type of COVID they have, and we're trying to make decisions on this. You can't make good scientific, much less medical decisions and safety decisions on information that isn't accurate. But this is exactly what our federal government is doing, and the medical community is doing, especially the higher up you get into Washington. And one has to ask the question, okay, why is that? Why don't we have better data? And why don't we have a better, tracking system for all of this? The systems just haven't been really developed. I think those in the upper echelon have been talking about pandemics. What if we have a pandemic? Well, if you've been talking about it, you know, if you're in, for example, the military, and you want to run through every scenario before you go into a war or into a situation, you want to run every scenario that could possibly happen so that you're prepared for any, you know, outcome that you may be faced with. But it seems like that message hasn't gotten down to the folks who are supposedly in charge of our healthcare systems.
Why would the European systems be so much better? Does it have anything to do, do you suspect, with socialized medicine? In other words, it's all one uniform system, and they can handle their data in an intelligent way that produces some sound science. I don't know how widespread socialized medicine is in Europe. I know Norway, for example, the United Kingdom. I don't know about the other systems. But may that be a reason for their getting better data than we have?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know if anybody really knows the answer to that specifically. Other than, you know, maybe people are, maybe doctors are reporting what they're finding, and the central agencies are actually accepting the data, and instead of coloring the outcome because of these other things that we've talked about, inappropriate payments for COVID patients. If a patient comes in and you've been tested positive, the hospital gets a little bonus for that. So they have a reason to try to count as many COVID patients as possible that are going into the hospital. Now, you know, we do have patients that get COVID that never are reported into the system because they don't go to the hospital, or they don't go to a medical professional to seek assistance. They're kind of, you know, trying to treat this on their own. And for most patients, that's not going to be a problem because, you know, now with the Omicron variant, the more variants we have and the more varied the variants get, then as we've talked about before, the less virulent the variant is, and so we have more milder cases, and it's not the people will probably not seek as much medical help as when the first virus came along, and more people were going to the hospitals and going to see their doctors about it. And there's more information out there as to how to treat this at home. I mean, most of the virus can be treated easily, as we talked about before, with either ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, those type of things. And so those people that have that information can as long as they don't have a severe case and it goes into the hyper immunity response, which is the second phase of infection of the coronavirus, then they would probably do just fine, and they'd probably do better at home than going into the hospital.
David, you had a question, and I talked over you. I'm sorry. Can you remember the question?
Which question was it?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question in itself.
I think I was remarking, and Don was saying something about what a good federal government would do, and I said, "Now, whose federal government are we talking about?" It was a kind of a snide little comment from the side, and I don't know. I mean, I should have more faith in our elected and appointed leaders.
There's really not much reason to, because it seems to me that the culprit on our side of the pond here is wealth. It's gotten in the way of sound thinking and realistic health decisions. It seems to me the health of the American public should have been paramount. Instead, we seem to be in third place or fourth place or something.
Well, and we haven't, the system is so bureaucratic in top heavy, if you will, and the top guy makes the decisions as opposed to distributed decisions where you can get, better results. I mean, I worked in industry and I worked in business, and the better the more you distribute your decision making, the better results you're going to get. So, if you have, for example, a business where the top guy makes all the decisions, then the results are going to be that, well, if he didn't think of something that would have made the process, let's say, more efficient, then it's not going to be more efficient. But if you distribute that, down to the working class and give them more responsibility, you wind up with a better product in the end. And that's been proven over and over again. Here in Washington, we've seemed to be pushing the point of, well, the top dog makes all the decisions and the underlings don't make any decisions without the top dog approving it. And, the result, of course, is going to be a poor system, which is indeed what we have.
Well, you're asking
Joe's getting a new dog, by the way.
I think that was just thrown in to confuse us all.
you mentioned the top dog when Joe's getting a new dog named Commander.
Oh, Commander. Well,
yeah, Commander. It'd be for Christmas, and then Jill is going to get a kitty.
Sure. So happy
the
for them.
But
I think the cat's name is going to be Lunch.
Well, it's relevant in this sense, David, because Donna's just talking about having a legitimate chief executive officer at the top of the pyramid. And if there's a CEO that knows what he's doing, those decisions filter up to him. From competent leadership underneath him, people he has found, appointed, assigned tasks, and coordinated. That's the job of a CEO, knowing what people to put in what slots so that you get good results, rather than saying everything comes from the buck stops here.
One of the things that wipes the big toothy grin off my face every morning when I wake up is I'm reminded that we got another 3 years left. There goes that cheery disposition. It's just gone.
Now, there's another issue that's making the news, too, and it's green energy. And we're talking about electric vehicles and charging stations and things that shutting down coal and getting rid of natural gas. There's an article over at the Cornwall Alliance that I brought to Don's attention. And it seems to me that, the question posed by the article is, can green energy cause a global food shortage? And apparently, now this writer's from India, and they're seeing record crops from global warming, from the carbon dioxide in the air. They're seeing vegetable matter growing like crazy, and it's feeding the country. And that's been a problem for them for decades. Here it also mentions that China is one of the world's largest food producers. Recently, an acute power shortage there reduced food output. And the markets in China were sent into panic. Global food shortages and increased prices could follow. If the whole world turns to this green energy, Don, is there a threat of food shortage?
Is there a threat? So the green energy that they're talking about is primarily, solar. The non coal producing or oil producing energy now, and wind, of course, solar and wind. Well, in order for solar to work, you've got to have sunlight. In order for wind power to work, you got to have wind. And the wind doesn't blow all the time. And if you get clouds over your solar panel or snow on your solar panel or things like that, then guess what? Your solar panels aren't producing electricity either. And so as we actually found out here in Texas, where we had the windmills freeze over and the solar panels got snow on them. You know, we had a power shortage in Texas.
An object lesson, if there ever was one. Yeah.
Yeah, so that there answers your question. If you're relying on these types of energy production, then you're going to have a intermittent power, which agricultural cannot depend on.
You know, there's some more background to that Texas problem that we'll add to the discussion here. I think it was a decade ago. I don't know exactly what year, but federal money was allocated to Texas for the purpose of winterizing power plants to protect them against cold and freeze-ups. But people in Texas, presumably in the state legislature at the time, or maybe it was some sort of an electrical power council, said, hey, we have money to spend. Let's spend it on wind turbines, which they did.
Which they did, and they didn't spend the money on heated wind turbines, and so the wind turbines, you know, froze and did not turn. anyway, so we had a power shortage. Well, the same thing is happening in these other countries, especially China, for example, that is producing now quite a bit of energy from solar and wind. And you can't have, for example, I'll give you an example. If you're irrigating your crops, well, irrigating your crops typically means that you have a pump, and that pump runs off of electricity. And if the electricity goes off, your pump is not pumping, your crops are not being irrigated, your crops are going to fail because they don't have enough water, and you've got a problem. And that then goes into the food chain, because you're not producing the crops that you need in order to feed your population. The other problem, of course, is the distribution of the crops, getting the crops from the field to the processing plants, which also require energy and consistent amount of energy. And so you don't have the energy for transportation of the crops. You don't have the processing power that you need in order to process the food and then ultimately get it to the grocery stores and the markets where the food can actually be distributed to the population. So interruptions in energy does, cause a threat to global food production. And this is basically what the article is warning about, in saying, hey, we shouldn't be getting rid of all of our coal-producing, all of our oil-producing energy. And in particular, you know, if you wanted clean energy, let's be honest, if you really want clean energy, go nuclear. I mean, nuclear power is the cleanest energy you could ever possibly get. Okay, yeah, okay, if a nuclear power plant explodes, you got a problem. But we now know how to contain manufacturing. The fact that we have containment units over our nuclear power plants, or at least we used to when we were building them, was specifically if something leaked, your pipes leaked or something, then you could contain the whole thing and it wouldn't be a disaster. But this whole idea that we shouldn't be using nuclear power because, oh my goodness, you know, that's you remember the nuclear bombs that went off in Japan? That's exactly what we're going to have. You just be strategic as to where you build these things. You don't build them around, the population centers.
Yeah, but they're closing them down one by one. Nuclear plants are disappearing.
It's insanity. Yeah. It's insanity. We're taking the cleanest type of energy we could ever possibly have, and we're closing the nuclear power plants down. We're closing the coal production down. And coal, for example, in India, 70% of India's electricity is coal-powered. 80% used to be, in our country, coal-powered. And so if you're replacing that with solar and wind, not only is it not continuous power, but it also is far more expensive, and so energy prices go up, and it's not reliable as a reliable source as we had before.
Now, all this seems to be spawned by the idea, the notion, the scientific conclusion that CO2 in the atmosphere in excess is a cause of all of our problems here. It's the root cause of climate change.
Well, if that was the case, why not go to nuclear power? Because nuclear power does not produce CO2. And by the way, CO2 is not a toxin. CO2 is plant food. And so, as India found out, because the CO2 is increasing over there, their plants are growing and they have more food than they've had in a very, very long time. So it's not a bad thing.
That's happening in a number of areas of the world, too. So
yes, yeah. And God created the system. Not only did he create us, but he created everything in it. He created all the stars and the suns and, you know, the moon and all these things precisely so that things would remain static and in equilibrium. So the more CO2 you have, the more plant growth you have. The more plant growth you have, the more plants are using the CO2, which then reduces the CO2 concentration and produces more oxygen, which we can breathe, and everybody's happy.
It's funny how it all works together.
Sounds pretty commonsensical to me. I don't think it'll work.
Life is so simple when you understand where it came from and how it's been planned out. Don, thanks very much. Again, Don, a member of the board of Creation Moments. I do want to mention their website, creationmoments.com. And there you will find a wellspring of scientific information that explains the biblical story of creation. Because scientifically, you can discover it there too. I mean, it's supported by science. And Don, we look forward to next week. And have a merry, merry Christmas, you and yours. Be blessed richly. And we'll see you.
Thank you very much.
See you in a week.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, Don.
Merry Christmas to you all, too.
Bye-bye.
Have a very blessed week.